What's going on, Bulls fan? This is Peter Szczecki, Pro Bull, the class of 2018, and you're tuned in to the It's Brewing podcast. Go Bulls.
You have to understand those who came before you. You can't just play for me.
Payoff pitch. Brutscher pulls it. Deep to right field. And this game is tied.
Every day is to make the university extremely proud, to make our alumni extremely proud of what we're doing in the program. Culture and work ethic and all of those things, those are living, breathing things.
Are you kidding me?
This is ripped, the first Hogan, and there is your game winner. The South Florida Bulls can celebrate. They are headed to the Super Regionals for the first time in school history.
If you don't have the expectation of getting to Omaha, and playing well in Omaha, you probably shouldn't be coaching Division I baseball.
What's up, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Brewing at McEwen. I am Adam Cartwright with you this evening, and with me is Matt Giardino. Matt, how are you doing, bud?
Doing good. A lot of exciting stuff going on with Bulls baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got some big news that we're going to talk about. We've got some got our new head coach coming in. We're going to talk about that briefly. We also got some assistants that are coming in that are out on the wires, and the first recruits are actually starting to come in. We'll talk about all of that. We'll also give you our thoughts on the College World Series, as that's kind of big tournament that is, as we record, in the final stages of setting up the final. But again, we'll talk about all that later on in the show. Right now, let's talk about the big news, and that is Coach Mitch Hannes is the new head coach for the Bulls. I'll just come out and say it. I was shocked. Matt, what were your thoughts when you heard the news?
Yeah, I would say shocked is a really good way of putting it. I think Michael Kelly really punched above his weight class in getting Coach Hannes to come here. He wasn't even on our radar, and I think, you know, none of us expected us to land such a successful coach at, you know, such a high level over his career. So just the fact that we got him, I've already, watched his press conferences and stuff like that. And he just sounds like an unbelievable guy.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at what he's done at Indiana State, and you got to think that, Michael Kelly, he went out and he got the best mid-major baseball coach in the country. And he did it at that coach's alma mater after he had built an empire. They were doing well and had and were on pace to kind of keep that going, two straight regionals, a super regional 2 years ago. And then able to bring him in, you say that he wasn't on our radar. He wasn't on anybody's radar. You look at D1 baseball, the local, the local radio stations. I don't think anybody had that, because I don't think anybody really thought that was an option. I don't think anybody thought that seat was hot. They knew it wasn't hot, and they don't think he was looking to go anywhere. So it was just a shock. And like you said, very, very successful, very exciting times with Coach Hannes coming in. But he has made his first sort of selections. First one we're going to talk about is going to be Coach Joey Holcomb, who's going to come to us from the University of South Carolina. He was the assistant coach there, also the assistant recruiting coordinator and assistant hitting coach. He was only there for, I believe, one or two seasons. Before that, he was with the Camels, I believe. Yeah, that is what they are. And they are actually been very good. Had a couple runs there into the regionals while he was there as the hitting coach. So comes to us with a recruiting and hitting background. What do you think about Coach Holcomb?
Yeah, I think, it's always unfortunate for some of these assistant coaches coming in a make or break year for the head coaches. Unfortunately for him, he was only there for one season, but, his success at Campbell before was really incredible. He led some of the best offenses in the country. A couple seasons he had, top runs scored, top home runs or top five home runs, some of the best batting average as a team in the country. I think he really knows how to harness that talent, especially on the offensive side of things. And, I'm sure if he stuck around at South Carolina for a few more years, he would have found a little bit more success. Not that he wasn't successful there, but you know, I think the Bulls are extremely lucky to find a guy like that to add to the coaching staff.
You're right about that. I think he was a big ad. Like, you know, like you said, it was unfortunate. It is unfortunate for these assistant coaches who kind of come in and have to leave. You know, not necessarily their fault, or, you know, sometimes they do play a role, but I don't think that was the case here. As again, the offensive numbers have always kind of followed Coach Holcomb wherever he goes. Also comes to us with that assistant recruiting coordinator position. I think that's going to kind of play a role, because I don't know if anyone else on the staff has had that role before. So again, he could play a role in the recruiting. On the pitching side of things, it appears we are going to bring in Coach Daniel Schlereth. Daniel is going to come to us from Western Michigan University. Not a lot of experience in coaching in general, a lot of experience in playing professional baseball, over 13 seasons, played for 10 different organizations, including three different stints with the Tigers in Arizona. Okay, I think that's important. I think he's seen a lot of different organizations and how they operate at the highest level. Another part of Coach Schlereth's resume that I really liked is that he began his coaching career in the player development part of the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. So he kind of started in that player development aspect before he got into the coaching part. But again, he did end up going to Western Michigan, was there for a couple of seasons, and they did pretty well. What'd you think about Coach Schlereth?
Yeah, just a couple things. And, you know, I think we saw some really big improvements for his pitching staff from year to year. I believe it was in either 2022 or 2023. He had, his team had over 8 ERA. And last season, it wasn't fantastic. It was at 5.5, but still a significant reduction in overall ERA. And then on top of that, the player development side of things, you know, that's such a big aspect of college baseball. And to have a guy that was able to, you know, help develop talent in a professional organization like that, you know, those are some really cool experiences that he's going to be able to take to USF and help out our young players and kind of hopefully instill a process that will develop them into being draft prospects and beyond.
Absolutely, that's true. And then finally, to just kind of round out the staff, you know, we mentioned how sometimes it's unfortunate that assistants come in on make or break years and it doesn't go so well and they end up leaving. Coach Cates isn't going to have to leave. He's going to be retained onto staff. What do you think about that decision?
I think that was honestly probably the best decision yet. He's really a player's coach. A lot of the kids were actually you know, hoping that he would get the head coaching job, and ultimately, you know, he stayed on board with us. But his ties to the Tampa Bay area, Florida recruiting, I think is, you know, you can't measure that, you know, especially for a staff coming in that doesn't necessarily know Florida as well. To have a guy like that to be retained, I think it's going to help us, and just the overall quality of the staff combined with his Florida experience, Tampa experience. I think it's a well-rounded coaching staff that I'm excited to see what, you know, what they're capable of. And then on top of that too, you know, we got the assistant coach also coming in from Indiana State. And I think, you know, he might end up in a player development role too, because obviously there's a three coach assistant coach limit. But I think that's actually the interesting part, is how are we going to fit all four assistant coaches into the overall coaching staff, and, you know, how are those roles going to be defined?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're onto something right at the player development side. I think one thing we're seeing with a lot of the, you know, bigger programs, the programs that we're trying to kind of aspire to grow into being, is you're seeing more than just a coaching staff actually on the staff. Just for example, throwing one out there, if you looked at Clemson's coaching staff last season, you saw the four coaches, the head coach, the three assistants, and then you saw 18 support staff positions. So, and these are in player development, program development, you know, just all different video analysis. But, you know, there's all different types of support staff positions that is growing into the sport. And so you do kind of want to see, you know, larger staffs and finding roles that they can be in more than just on the field coaches. But I think you also touched on a really important part about retaining Coach Cates, and that's his kind of retaining his ties to Florida. Because, like you said, I think that is something that this staff maybe lacks when you look at their resumes. Very, very great resumes. I just don't know it has a lot of Florida ties in it. And that's something that Coach Cates is going to keep, not only with his experience at USF, but his experience in the Florida high school coaching scene and his experience at UT, as he had a couple of stints coaching down
And
in the city there.
UCF as well.
At UCF as well. So really just a lot of ties all around the Central Florida area. I think he's going to round it out. I'm very interested to see how him and Coach Holcomb kind of bring their offensive mentalities together, because I don't think if you go back and look into our archives, you're not going to see many Bruin and McEwen episodes where we're particularly upset at how our offense has performed under Coach Cates. So again, I just want to see how those two minds are going to come together. But it is going to be I think it's really looking like a great staff. I think it's got a lot of the X's and O's types fundamentals experience that you look for, but I also think it has a lot of the CEO type of things that you want to see. If you remember, or if you look at Coach Hanna's resume, at Lincoln College, he was the head baseball coach. He was also the athletic director, and he ended up being the university president, which shows a lot of leadership experience. It shows a lot of, the ability to manage people. It shows a lot of directorship experience. It just the ability to kind of manage things outside of just the game of baseball. He really has a manage on that or a handle on that. And then the assistant coach you said from Indiana State, he actually came to Indiana State after following Coach Hanna's at Lincoln College as the baseball coach and athletic director. So again, that management aspect that plays a role. I think if you talk to a lot of head coaches, they're going to tell you that once you become a head coach, it really becomes about those CEO kind of player management, team management aspects that really kind of make or break your job. It doesn't really come down to your X's and O's knowledge. That's kind of what your assistants do. And so I think that CEO knowledge is really going to come into play there.
Yeah, and I think with Michael Kelly, his hiring process, how it's evolved over the years, with obviously the hiring of Coach Golish for football and Coach Amir for basketball, I feel like this hire with Coach Hannes kind of fits ex that exact mold of, the type of person we're trying to bring in here to lead young men to, become professionals, become great people, great citizens of their communities. And, I'm thinking he's going to be a great fit with the whole coaching staff.
Yeah, I think one of the lines that really resonated with me, and at the end of the day, it does kind of come down to kind of maybe some press conference, cliches, but I really liked when he said he wanted his players to be ready to pay the price, and he wants substance over style, and those were kind of two things that was really resonated with me out of this press conference. So very, very exciting times coming, but with the new staff come some new recruits that are coming in. First one we're going to talk about is Landon Yorick. It was really hard not to say York there, but Landon Yorick from New Mexico Junior College is going to come to us after a pretty good sophomore season. It looks like it was injury shortened in some way. Only 7 appearances, 5 starts, 4 wins, no 1 loss, and a 3.14 ERA. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, I think the thing that stands out to me is just his overall whip. He only has a 1.19 whip. I think prior staffs have had, issues with allowing walks, and a guy like that coming in from JUCO, it's hasn't been too often where we get a guy with the success that this kid has seen, even though it's only a small sample size. But he's really shown to have a lot of success at the JUCO level. Even 27 strikeouts in 28 innings. He can get guys out with the strikeout, but also he doesn't walk a lot of guys either.
Yeah, like you said, he 27 strikeouts in 28 innings. Maybe not that over dominant strikeout guy, but he is able to get people out, and that's a good sign for me, because you're not going to have your strikeout stuff every game. So he does show that ability to get people out on top of that. But if you are following the Bruin and McEwen X profile, which you should be, you would have seen us post his commitment, and you would have seen his hair, which I think it's going to catch some eyes. If it stays that way when he gets onto campus, I think it's going to play well here in Tampa. But we're very excited for Landon to come. The next one we're going to look at is Alex Brazier from Eckerd College. He was a freshman last year, local kid from Ruskin, Florida, down here. Went to Leonard High School. Good size kid, too. 6'1", 195 pounds. Played pretty well for Eckerd. Ended up hitting 311. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, just another really solid recruit. And, you know, if we continue to recruit the way that we have early on, we're going to assemble a really talented roster. You know, you bring up the 311 average, but overall, you know, he's got great size. So, you know, he's got a lot of room for development on the power aspect of things. He only had 3 home runs last year and had 27 RBIs. But, you know, I think with some more time, a little bit more time in a Division I weight room, getting on a different program, I think that frame will fill out even more. And there's a good potential there that we'll see some power out of him too.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, Eckerd's a pretty good school. I do believe they played UT in their super regionals and gave them a pretty good run. And was really the only school in their tournament that gave them a run on their way to their latest national championship. I can't remember what number it is because it's so high, but I believe it's number 9. But again, pretty good school there in Eckerd. Again, local kid, hits pretty well. Like you said, the power numbers not being there, that doesn't concern me too much because, you know, we do see the frame there. And sometimes that jump, you know, from high school to college can be a little bit daunting in terms of the power. Maybe that doesn't come around as much as you would like. 41 hits to 44 strikeouts, probably going to see that come down, only 13 walks. So he definitely does not get cheated. He gets up there and gets his hacks in. And you know what? When they're young, I'm here for it. You want to see him up there swinging it. It's the only way to get better at something is to do it. And so really want to see him maybe refine that a little more. But pretty excited about this one, actually.
Yeah, and I think what one thing that really stands out to me about him is his 393 on base percentage. Because, you know, you talk about his hits to strikeout ratio and stuff like that, but he still ended up with a 393 on base percentage. So, you know, as he matures as a player, there's a high ceiling with this kid, and I'm really excited to see what he could do on the Bulls.
Yeah, absolutely. Last one we'll talk about today, Carlos Jacome. I'm not sure how to say it. I'm sorry, but we'll have you on the show, and you can let me have it. But he comes to us from Miami-Dade College, shortstop, originally from Venezuela. High school Christopher Columbus, hit 309 with 5 home runs and 37 RBIs for Miami-Dade. What are your thoughts on this one initially? This is relatively new, right?
Yeah, this dropped about 20 minutes ago. Really excited about, yeah, breaking news. Really excited about Carlos coming to the Bulls. He's a really good contact hitter. You know, he had 5 home runs. He didn't have too many at bats last year. I think he played in a little bit more than 50 games. But overall, 16 stolen bases. You know, he brings 5 tools to the plate. I think there's a lot of potential with him. And not only that, but I think it's really exciting to get a player from Miami-Dade Junior College. They always produce really good prospects out of there year in and year out. So to tap into that pool and being able to get a shortstop, especially after losing Eric Snow to Auburn earlier in the cycle. You know, I think this is a guy that can step in there day one and make a really big impact.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned losing Eric Snow in the cycle, and we've lost a few others as well. And I think that's something that's kind of going to be new for us as Bulls fans, because Coach Mull's been here for the last, 7, 8 some odd seasons. You know, nowadays when you lose a coach, you lose a lot of players too. And you know, you bring a lot of new players in, but it's like you said, there's going to be a lot of new faces in this Bulls lineup and rotation. And it's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out and who's going to be there. I think fall this year is going to be pretty fun to watch. We're going to have a lot of guys that we've never seen before, and guys we didn't know would be here that we're going to get to see play. And that's going to be pretty, it's going to be pretty interesting, I think. What do you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think one thing that can't be looked over either is the guys that have decided to stay here. You look at a guy like Lawson Gailey, who, is coming off another good season after following up that with, his freshman season. And then you look at a guy like Corey Kling, who had a great freshman season. He's coming back. We got Matt Rose coming back. We got, we got a lot of really good players coming back. Rafi Betancourt. So it's going to be an interesting mix because, those guys have gotten some great experience in the last, year or 2 years at least. And, I think they're going to be able to teach a lot of these new guys a lot of things as well. And just about the school and about the history of USF. And I think just the overall mesh of the talent coming in and the talent that we have staying here, there's going to be a lot of excitement, I think, come, February.
I think you're right. I think you're right as well. Well, we will have to wait and see how this all shakes out. Again, we'll have a lot more recruits coming in the coming months, and we'll also get some news as the staff begins to kind of officially take shape, and we can kind of see that. We'll even have Coach Hannah's on in the future. And again, it's going to be an exciting time. It is an exciting time in college baseball in general because the College World Series is in the winding down stages of selecting its two final participants. Just to give you some live action, Texas A&M is currently leading Florida 2-0 in the bottom of the third as Jack Caglione, I believe, stands in a box. And that is always a daunting picture if you're standing on the mound. What are your thoughts on this College World Series? It's pretty crazy. The first day we had, 3 out of 4 walk-offs?
Yeah, it started off super hot with, plenty of competitive games. There's been some controversy as well, with potential missed calls. But overall, I think my biggest takeaway is just the fact that we have two teams from the state of Florida that made it to the Final Four teams. It's not every year that that happens, even though we do have a lot of talented teams from our state, but kudos to Florida State, and Daniel Cantu hit a home run today in the College World Series, even though, they didn't move on to the next round. But, it's just been a really exciting tournament. And I think this year, more than any year, has really solidified it for me as the most entertaining, college tournament out of any sport, and just the competitiveness, the excitement, nail-biting games all throughout. It's been extremely fun to watch.
You're right about that. You mentioned Florida State. They ran into a juggernaut with Tennessee this year. You got to tip their hat to them. They've kind of been on that doorstep, knocking on being in this final for a couple years now. They finally have broken through and made that happen. I believe Tennessee got Florida State for both of their losses. Again, unfortunate, you run into the best team in the country, but that's what happens when you go to Omaha. You're going to play the best 8 teams in the country. Again, a tough loss, game of inches. Did he swing? Absolutely. Did you get the call? No, we didn't. And everyone, you want to act like just because they didn't get that call, it just, that's it. Tennessee wins. No, it was another pitch, and that kid put a great swing on it, I mean,
yeah.
There are other aspects that go into it. But if you're like us, again, we kid did kind of have a little bit of stake in that game, as we wanted to see Daniel and his team do well again. But if you're a college baseball fan, holy cow, right? I mean, just nail biting, like you said. The North Carolina games, honestly, throughout the entire tournament, have been, must-see TV. I think it's been the most watched tournament, which I think it's also getting the most coverage. So those two things, I think, are going hand in hand. But just fantastic. You mentioned the two teams from Florida. It's great that, you see Florida go all the way from, being a team under 500, getting in and going all the way to Omaha. But I can't help but look at that as somebody representing a mid-major thinking, this isn't really a great precedent. That these teams from the SEC and the ACC is going to say, hey, we put 4 teams in Omaha too, so we're right up there. That these teams that, the SEC put 11 teams in the tournament, with the one of them being Florida, who didn't have a winning record. Now, they're going to say we validated that by going all the way to Omaha, I'm going to argue, well, you know, the person that, you know, the team that, you know, was in your place could have went to Omaha too, but it's just a rough precedent for me to think that there was no other mid-major program that was, you know, didn't have the resume to get into Florida's spot. And now that they got the spot and they go to Omaha, it's just like, oh, you know, from now on, it's like, oh, we're going to look at these teams that, you know, 11, 12 teams out of the SEC, and the rest of you guys from the ACC can just figure it out, you know?
Yeah, you know, you talk about that, and I think, you know, one of those teams is Charleston that was more than deserving to not only, you know, make the regional, but even potentially be a host as well. But I think, you know, there's maybe some bias with Florida just because they made it to the College World Series finals last year. I know there's a lot of roster shakeups and a lot of changes, but you know, that maybe there's a method to the madness as well. I don't necessarily like rewarding a team that has a mediocre regular season like that, but at the same time, you know, maybe the committee saw something in them because they are in the, you know, the final four teams that are still standing. So, just you know, we can go either way, but I think ultimately, you know, they've proven their point.
It just, I guess the juxtaposition of it, I guess if that's the right SAT word for me to use, probably incorrectly. But you know, you look at a team like us, and you hate to say it, but the regular season doesn't matter. Like it really doesn't. Like you, like it, if not for the fact that you have to be in the top eight to make the tournament, you could lose every regular season game, win your tournament, and we're in the exact same place as the College of Charleston. You know what I'm saying? Who had won every game, didn't win their tournament, they're out. The regular season doesn't matter for us. And it matters way too much for Florida because they don't even have to win all, they don't even have to win most of their games. And they're going to get in on the merit of that. So
Yeah. No,
that
it's
seems
really
like it's just way, like the system is way too scaled in that. Like the regular season, to, in my opinion, has to matter to everyone. In some way.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
What that answer is, I don't know. I personally, I think you got to move the automatic qualification to the regular season champion and just say, all right, the tournament is just for the tournament, go win it. But
I think that's a great point. I think, you know, we saw the same thing happen with our basketball team, and you know, we had an unbelievable regular season in basketball, going 16-2. You know, all sorts of crazy, you know, first times for our basketball program, and ultimately, you know, we won one game in the tournament, didn't make the NCAA tournament. Same thing that we're starting to see now too with, you know, the baseball tournament. But I think your solution is probably the best solution is, you know, you crown the regular season champion, you crown them the champion, you give them the bid and, you know, call it a day. 'Cause, you know, it takes a lot more to win over the course of 18 games in conference than it does over the span of one weekend. You know, the counter argument to that too is, you know, you teams that do win the conference tournament, they are typically the teams that are hotter. But it's also kind of a weird precedent to say that, you know, the regular season doesn't mean anything.
and I know, and it's weird, and it's weird for me to say it when it comes out of my mouth, but when you look at it the way I do, it doesn't. Like, I'm sorry, but like, you know, did we deserve that super regional run when we were under 500? That's kind of my what I'm saying right now. I don't know that we did, you know, but you get hot at the right time. But I just feel like the regular season somehow, some way, it's got to matter more. You know, and what's not going to happen is you're not going to get two automatic qualifiers. You're not going to get one for the tournament and one for this regular season because the, you know, the Power Five is going to be like, oh no, that's giving too much. We can't guarantee two teams from everybody. Then we don't get 11 from the SEC.
Yeah, maybe the solution is, you know, the highest ranked RPI teams from the conference tournament champions also get, you know, an automatic bid. It could be like the top four or something like that that didn't automatically make it in as an at-large bid. There might be some sort of solution out there, but I guess we'll leave that up to the big guys.
It's just frustrating at times. We are actually getting short on time. It's been actually a great show, Matt. I've had a pleasure chatting all this up with you. Like you said, just an exciting future that we have on our hands. Do you have any final thoughts?
I think you said it well. We have a very exciting future and really looking forward to seeing the rest of the roster construction and really looking forward to meeting Coach Annis and having him on the show. I think Mark mentioned it on his podcast last week that he had a chance to speak with him, and he has nothing but good things to say about him as well. Also, another thing is too is I've had a good amount of his former players, following me on Twitter and even reaching out to a couple of us as well. So I think that just speaks volume to him and his character, him and the relationships that he's built with his players over the years too.
That's great. Well, listen, Bulls fans, just because it's the off season does not mean that we are going to have an off season at Bruin. We have a lot of things planned coming up. We have a lot of former Pro Bowls coming on as special guests. We will announce those as we kind of finalize the times. But again, if you want to be ready for those, make sure you are following the podcast on where whatever platform that you're listening. Make sure you got the notifications turned on so that it notifies you and lets you know when we drop these podcasts. Like I said, we've got some very exciting special guests coming up. Can't say too much right now. Like I said, we will drop that information as it comes final. But that is all we have for this week. Bulls fans, we will talk to you guys next week. Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.